This is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
Hello and welcome to Duck Snort Baseball Podcast. I'm Greg Nix.
I'm Waylon McQueen.
And we have an excellent show for you today. We're going to do a check-in of the, just the kind of the league, I guess. It's Memorial Day weekend and sort of a time, I think, in common baseball parlance where we can start talking about, like, oh, is this team for real? Is this player for real? Like, these statistics are starting to have more meaning. So we're going to do kind of a league-wide check-in. We're also going to talk about a few interesting transactions that happened this week. And, of course, we're going to continue our favorite and least favorite players for every franchise with we're going to finish off our sort of favorite teams amongst Waylon and I with the Kansas City Royals, which I'm excited to talk about because you're going to have no idea who my least favorite Royal of all time is.
Oh, I'm not. Wow. I didn't even think about it. I thought about you'd have an opinion about it because they're in the Central, so it'd be easier.
Right.
Yeah, I wonder who it's going to be.
Yeah, well,
is it going to be like someone from the I hate John Mayberry.
Yeah, right.
Freddie Patek, get out of here.
Yeah.
I'm excited to find out.
Mm-hmm. Well, that'll be up in a little bit. Before we get to that, we want to give a shout out, as always, to our podcast network, Boardwalk Audio. Very much appreciate them putting this show out and into your ears. You can support Boardwalk by visiting ducksnortpodcast.com. Click the Support Our Artist link. That'll take you to Amazon. Shop like you normally would. You'll get a small percentage back to Boardwalk and to Ducksnort. So please do that. Also, thanks to offthebenchbaseball.com, who helps us distribute. I was going to say distribute.
Distribute.
And that's not how it's said.
Distribute.
Great site. They have a great post up right now about the Hanley Ramirez move that the Red Sox made, which we will also talk about a little bit, but a cool timeline. So go check that out. And I think that's our business up top. We got our business done. Oh, before we dive into baseball talk, we wanted to do a real quick RuPaul's Drag Race check-in.
RuPaul's Drag Race check-in.
Yeah, we haven't talked about RuPaul's Drag Race. I have no idea if anybody who listens to this podcast watches RuPaul's Drag Race or cares about our opinions, but it's very fun to talk about.
Yeah.
And I want to just try to sell people on it that, like, in spite of the NBA playoffs happening, MLB having a great season so far, RuPaul's Drag Race is maybe the most compelling thing I'm watching, even still, in terms of, like, competitions.
Oh, way better than the expansion Vegas Golden Knights making it to the Stanley Cup final.
I was just in Vegas. I literally got back yesterday.
Oh, that's right.
And Vegas is going crazy about the Golden Knights.
Great.
Digression. But all of the, like, casinos, like Caesar's Palace has that big, like, Julius Caesar statue in front.
Right.
And it's like holding a big foam hockey stick. And like they all have billboards up, like,
that's
on
great.
Their marquees and stuff. Yeah.
Good.
It's kind of cool.
They deserve it.
But who gives a shit because RuPaul's Drag Race?
Wait, I had another digression. Oh. On air, this is personal talk. How was Beatles Love?
Beatles Love. I enjoyed it a lot. Here's what I didn't enjoy.
Yeah.
It was like half empty.
Oh, no.
Yeah, which was kind of a bummer just because, like, we were sitting pretty high up, which was cool because you could see the whole stage, but like, seeing so many empty seats like took a little bit of the energy out of
it. I get that.
Especially at the beginning because it's so, like, the Cirque show that I this was my second Cirque show, and the previous one was, like, awe-inspiring with the stunts and the flips and stuff. And this is much more, like, dancey energy, like, relies on the music. And so without that energy, I felt like a little bit of it was lost.
That's too bad.
But the I think it's Within You, Without You when they're on the boat and the, like, sheet comes out
that's
over
the part,
audience.
That's why
and stuff.
I told you to sit high, because it's better to be over than under.
Right. Yeah. I lost my shit. It was
great. Good.
Yeah,
that's like almost the whole reason I recommended you sitting where you did.
Yeah, it was
because
awesome.
It's better. Under, it's cool for a different way, but especially with fewer people, then that's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. I'm so relieved. Because if you're like, oh, I wish I was under that sheet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cool. All right. So that was a digression. Back to RuPaul's Drag Race. Why everybody tuned in.
Yeah, exactly.
This is season 10. It's been, to me, a great season.
Strong season. The queens are pretty even across the board. There's been very few like extremely weak links.
Yeah, I have no idea who's going to win, which isn't
so there's common. Five queens left.
Yeah, obviously spoiler, but...
Spoiler.
Well, that's not a spoiler. You should know. But from here on out, if you're not caught up on Drag Race.
Yeah.
Five queens left.
And one of the best queens, or one of the most enjoyable queens, I guess, went home this past week.
Monet Exchange.
Somewhat controversial because maybe she didn't deserve to be in the bottom two. I don't think so. It seems like you agree when we were talking before.
Yeah.
Robin, my girlfriend, has a theory that because Aquaria is so popular amongst the gay community and like on Instagram and stuff, they didn't want to risk her going home.
That's probably true, because it
would hurt the ratings, maybe.
That's true.
They didn't put her in the bottom. But also, she has been, I guess, stronger across the season than Monet, like in terms of she's never really been close to the bottom before. And so I can appreciate this sort of like judgment of like, oh, well, let's weigh the entire season.
And Monet has had a couple of like truly bad runways.
Yeah.
Like when you see tape and stuff. Like,
yeah. You know what it's kind of like is like the baseball All-Star game when it's like, oh, do you take like Jose? This wouldn't be an argument, but it's like, okay, Jose Altuve is having like a bit of a down year at second base, and Scooter Gennett is having an amazing year. And I know they're not in the same league, but just
you know what I'm saying?
It's like, do you weigh career achievement versus like, oh, this guy's having an amazing half season? And actually, I was thinking about that recently because the White Sox just signed Michael Saunders to a minor league deal, and he was an All-Star in 2016. And was a free agent because he got cut by the Orioles last year because he had a terrible second half in 2016 and then a terrible year in 2017. And I was like, well, I guess this guy shouldn't have been an All-Star probably. But I'm still happy. I like when guys get that.
I think because it's like if you're like a mediocre player, that's going to be your career.
Like, yeah, that's like the highlight of your career.
You're never going to win an MVP.
Right.
Or even be in a discussion. Or if you're fighting for a starting job like half of your career,
right?
Then like an All-Star is like gonna be,
and you can always say you're an MLB All-Star.
Yeah. And I'm always gonna say AS after your name on Baseball Reference.
Yeah, right, exactly. And that's meaningful to me as a fan, I guess. But I think so two things. I think that Queens being on RuPaul's Drag Race is like that. Mm-hmm. Even if you get knocked out first or second, it's like you were on Drag Race.
Oh, definitely.
And like at a certain point in the season, how do you evaluate like, oh, they've been solid the entire season versus like, oh, they've been up and down, and this time maybe they weren't the worst, but they were still kind of towards the bottom.
I think later in the season when it's close, like because Aquaria and Monet, I feel like we're close. I think Cameron, everyone agreed, should have been in the bottom.
That's the other, yeah, for sure. But that's the other bullshit is I liked Monet's lip sync way better than Cameron's.
I don't know if it was like, this lipstick stuff is getting really difficult because I thought, I don't know, I would have given it to Cameron over Eureka last week.
Oh, I wouldn't have. But maybe I'm just not a fan of Cameron.
Yeah.
Monet's
I agree. I think Monet's lip sync, like the split slide didn't really work.
It didn't work, but she's just such a specific performer. And like every moment, it's like my favorite lip syncs are like moment to moment. They like, are in it and they're making specific choices versus like, oh, I have this whole thing choreographed and like I'm doing like these moves. It's like Cameron just has dead eyes, you know,
and Monet's
like in it. Also, that song is tight. If everybody like has not heard it, it's Lizzo.
And
it's,
that was a good song.
Feeling Good, I think, is the name of it. Or it Good like, as Hell good is as the hell. Name of it. It's so good.
Which I was surprised because I had never heard of Lizzo, which might say more about me than anything.
Like, but she was a good judge.
She was a good judge, and I was like, oh, sometimes it's like weird when they have these like guest judges that aren't like super famous and they play one of their songs. But that one really worked.
It was dope. I added it to my Spotify immediately.
Here's what I think like in this situation, going back to if Monet won. First of all, this was Monet's third time lip syncing.
Yeah.
And traditionally, if you're going to win your third lip sync, you have to like, it's got to be like an all-timer. And since Cameron, unless it was just so obvious that Monet destroyed Cameron, like there's just no chance Monet wins. So even if it's like, if you're scoring and Monet gets like a 7 out of 10 and Cameron gets a 6, Cameron still wins because Monet has too much stacked against her.
Yeah.
That's traditionally been the case forever. So if it's even kind of equal, Monet goes home every time.
Yeah, that sucks, though. I mean,
yeah, it does suck. I'm going to miss having Monet around.
Monet's a more interesting queen and, like, by far a more interesting personality to have on this show.
Definitely. But Monet will be back for All Stars 4. Like,
hopefully. And hopefully she'll kick her looks up a notch.
The other theory is that she's very... I know you didn't watch season 8, but she's pretty similar to Bob the Drag Queen in a lot of ways.
Oh, interesting.
She's compared to Bob the Drag Queen, who won season 8. Mm. So there's also a theory of, like, Rue can't basically have, in 3 seasons, 2 Bob the Drag Queens win.
This is... It's
part
funny.
Of the,
I'm
part
seeing,
of the
like...
Part is because they're black and bald, which is a little annoying. But
right.
Like, they are kind of, like, the same big personality.
Yeah. It's funny. I'm, like, seeing all these... Since we're talking about it on Ducksnort, I'm seeing all these, like baseball similarities, I guess, which, like, in that, it's kind of like the not exactly the same, but like the award, the like MVP, people get tired of giving the MVP to Mike Trout, basically, or giving the Cy Young to Clayton Kershaw or whatever. It's like kind of similar.
It's been the most egregious. It was when Pujols didn't win like 7 straight. MVP.
Oh, yeah.
Like when
Barry Bonds or Randy Johnson didn't win the Cy Young. It's like, when somebody is just so dominant year after year, you get bored. Or in the NBA, LeBron, you know?
Yeah.
It's like LeBron probably should have won the last 10 MVPs. Like, sure, Steph Curry, okay, give him one. Like, give it that. Like, but like, LeBron's the greatest player. He should win every year, you know?
It's just, it's too. I mean, it happened to Michael Jordan. I think he only won like 4.
Yeah.
Like, but come on.
Well, we talked about this last week with Frank Thomas, too. It's making a few All-Star teams.
I think but here's the thing. It's a great Final Five.
Yeah.
Great top five. I have no clue who's going to win. Cracker and Aquaria have not lip synced yet, which is crazy to have 2 of 5 not lip sync.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone has at least 1 win. And in fact, Cracker has 1. All the others have 2. Or maybe Cameron only has 1. Mm-hmm. So it's like very even. There's no... Because some seasons it's like, well, someone has 4 wins.
Yeah.
Like if Eureka had 4 wins, it'd be like, well, Eureka's the favorite. I have no idea who's going to win.
Yeah, me neither. No Tune clue. In, everybody.
But Asia, I'm firmly on Team 8.
I'm kind of on Asia. Team Eureka, which I know a lot of people think she's annoying, but
she's good.
She's good.
Yeah, she's good. She's good.
Well.
Good Drag Race talk.
Yeah, great Drag Race
great,
talk.
Just realized the zipper's down.
Yeah, I just realized my fly's down. You're going to have to cover for me while I do this.
Oh, I'll cover my eyes. I thought you were going to cover my eyes. Oh, so let's talk about baseball, huh?
Yeah, let's talk about baseball.
Let's start with...
By the way, did you notice my zipper was down before?
I would have told you. I definitely... If something's in someone's teeth, if their fly is down, I always
tell them.
You'll tell them. I'll tell
You're a good man.
Yeah. Who cares?
Yeah.
It's like a second of embarrassment versus like later the embarrassment you'd suffer if you saw like 15 people and you were like, my fly was down?
Yeah, for sure.
And then you might even do a, why didn't Waylon tell me? So should we talk about Hanley Ramirez first?
Yeah, let's talk about it for a sec. Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, I totally understand it from the Red Sox point of view. A little bit surprising just because like the last that I had sort of checked in with him, he had had a very hot start to the year. Like he was like one of the best bats in the Red Sox lineup.
Yeah.
In April.
Did you look at his April-May splits?
Yeah. And it makes sense. I mean, he's been so terrible in May. And he had a vesting option that like at 450 plate appearances or something would have been $22 million next year. Yeah. Obviously, they don't want to pay that because he has not been very productive on the whole.
It's a little weird because how much do you believe in Swihart? Because that's basically the decision they made.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I believe more in Swihart for $500,000 than I do Hanley Ramirez for like $40 million over the next. But did you read that it was actually Alex Cora who told Dave Dombrowski they should get rid of Ramirez?
Whoa.
Like they were gonna DFA or trade Swihart or something. That was Dombrowski's plan, and then Cora said like, "It should be Hanley." Like, which is really interesting because like that says something about Hanley's clubhouse presence. Yeah. In addition to kind of, but also what makes it an even easier decision for the Red Sox is Mitch Moreland is having an insane year.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's not having a Mitch Moreland year.
No,
he's having like a J.D. Martinez year.
So, yeah, that did complicate things. They made the decision.
Yeah, made it way simpler.
I think it was a good decision. I like, because that's like, to me, I don't know, because the NFL doesn't have guaranteed contracts. Like, I like that it's just like, I don't, this player doesn't fit anymore. Let's just get rid of him in the NFL.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, we don't have to praise the NFL right now. But that's the one small thing. But I think it sucks that baseball teams have to hang on to players or feel like they have to because of contract stuff.
Yeah. I know what you're saying, but yeah. Like, also, I think that they should have guaranteed contracts
to make so you can't just all of a sudden not have money.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's just so many things that are already in the owner's favor. You know,
I guess that's true. Yeah.
That, I mean, we talked about multiple episodes this season about minor league pay and like the arbitration system and like all that. So it's like,
you're right. I just defended the owners by accident.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it happens, but that's sort of what gets my goat is like, we're conditioned to be on the side of the owners.
Yeah.
We're conditioned. I mean, it's happening with White Sox fans right now where it's like, well, they should just keep Kopech and Jimenez in the minors all season until next year. And it's like, no, we shouldn't be rooting for our teams to be actively worse so that ownership can pay these guys less money when they're good. Like, that is fucking lame as hell. Yeah, like, it totally divorces the idea of like watching baseball as a fun thing from like, and I guess that for the Red Sox fans, it's kind of like, well, I actually don't know which side of this argument would fall on, because like, probably the Red Sox are marginally better if they have Hanley Ramirez the rest of the year versus Blake Swihart and, you know, then have to pay him $22 million next year.
Yeah.
So it's like, I guess you want them to be a little bit worse this year so that they have that money for free agency or whatever.
I feel like a Red Sox fan, I have to be happy, right? Like, I feel like
he just can't be a favorite. He's such a disappointment.
Yeah, we talked 2 weeks ago about how much I hated Alfonso Soriano for basically the same reason.
Yeah.
Like, I would have loved if the Cubs would have DFA'd to save him.
Right.
You know, like,
yeah.
To be a
you
little
worse. You
just
wouldn't have to watch him anymore.
I feel like if you're a Red Sox fan, that's got to be where you are, right?
Yeah, probably.
Like,
I mean, they've
been...
It's
not like you're like, yay, Swihart, but...
Yeah. Gosh, that offseason for the Red Sox, signing Hanley and Pablo Sandoval, woof.
Big time woof.
That's rough.
That was rough. Remember when they also did that Adrian Gonzalez-Carl Crawford thing?
When they
traded for Adrian Gonzalez. Or wait, how did that work?
No, they traded to the Dodgers. They signed Carl Crawford and Adrian Gonzalez.
They got rid of those.
They got rid of those contracts. Which, okay, this is a good segue. Yeah. Because today, as we're heard today, Sunday, when we're recording this, the Padres and Twins made a salary dump deal.
Yeah.
Which I find interesting, which is the Twins traded Phil Hughes and a like compensation pick some international bonus pool money to the Padres for basically nobody. So the Padres are, Phil Hughes is at this point has been hurt a lot, is very overpaid. He's making $14 million. The Twins don't have a lot of money, obviously.
Right.
So the Twins gave the Padres a draft pick to take Phil Hughes, which is a very NBA move. This happens all the time in the NBA, but you don't see it very often in baseball because you can't really trade draft picks. The closest thing I guess I can think of is when the Braves acquired Bronson Arroyo and Touki Toussaint from the Diamondbacks.
Right. Yeah.
They basically took Bronson Arroyo's contract
to get
and were paid a prospect, Touki Toussaint, for it. So I think it's interesting. I think it's a savvy move by the Padres, and like for the Twins, you know, it's frustrating, I think, as a fan when your team, you know owners have more money than they're spending, basically.
Right.
So like, in an ideal world, there's no reason that they should need to do a salary dump like this. But if the Twins are trying to get better at the trade deadline and they can get somebody with that chunk of payroll space they got rid of, I think it makes sense too. So yeah. I think it's a really interesting trade, I guess.
I think it only becomes super frustrating if that money isn't reinvested.
Right.
But if it is, I think it's a great move, because it's not like Phil Hughes was going to be, he's a major league pitcher.
Yeah. But he's been very bad the last couple
years. Yeah, he's been
very
bad. I think that from both sides, because I think it is a good move by the Padres.
Yeah, for sure.
I like that for the Padres. It seems to fit whatever the Padres are trying to do, which is kind of like slowly get better with decent players or potentially decent players.
Yeah.
Also, the whole pitcher's ballpark thing. I don't know what Target Field is. Do you?
I don't know.
Maybe it doesn't have a reputation. I don't think it's going to hurt the Padres. I think they have the money. How many years does he have left? Is it just this?
This is his last year, yeah. No, it's a great move for the Padres, and it's something that I wish the White Sox would consider doing, kind of.
Yeah, I think overall, I mean, I don't have a lot of opinions about it other than it just seems to make sense, and the only real down, it seems like the only way this could truly go south is if the Twins just eat, like the owners just don't ever give that money back to anybody
else. Or I guess if the Padres can fix Hughes and turn him into the starter he was 5 years ago, but that seems unlikely.
With those type of trades, when that happens, like Arrieta to the Cubs, or it happens, it seems like anytime anybody ever goes to the Pirates, it's like obviously it wasn't working in that original organization. Like you can't say.
It's like if the team could have done it, they would have.
Yeah, with players like that, obviously if they're like 19 or 20, then they might have needed more time to develop. But like, When the Pirates rehabilitated Francisco Liriano or what it was, like a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if any team could have done that. It's not like he's on the verge of that. So that, to me, Phil Hughes with the Twins is Phil. We saw it.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't going to get better. So why not? Why not get rid of the money? And Padres, why not try to fix him?
Right. No, I'm with you. Interesting and sort of different trade. The other trade that happened this week was the Mariners acquired Denard Span and Alex Colome from the Rays for a couple of prospects who I don't know anything about the prospects, but I do know the Mariners have a very bad farm system, like ranked worst in the league. So the prospects can't be anybody huge. So this is, again, more of a salary dump, I think, for the Rays. And for the Mariners, it's interesting to me because we talked about them a lot last week, obviously, in the wake of the Cano suspension, and now D. Gordon is hurt. Span is sort of taking over for D. Gordon, I guess, to fill some of those at-bats, and he's having a decent year. Colome is a good reliever, potentially the Rays' best reliever. I think he had a little bit of a down year last year, but has been good overall since he moved to the bullpen. And to me, what's interesting about this is, like, and the Mariners as a whole seem like an exercise in, like, oh, how far can, like, fiddling on the margins of your team get you?
Yeah.
Like, can that get you to the playoffs if you, like, maximize every roster slot by, like, you know, you get 0.2 wins more out of every roster spot? Can that actually get you an extra, like, I don't, what's the math on that? That would be, like, an extra 3 wins or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I'm interested to watch in that because it seems like that is Jerry DePoto, the GM's kind of roster building strategy as a whole. And like he sort of is doubling down on it in the wake of this Cano injury. It's like it's not like he tried to trade for a guy like Scooter Gennett, who's having a great year. He's like, no, we're going to like stay the course, like sort of try to plug these holes and then see where that gets us.
I mean, it's essentially just like a different version of what the Rays have been doing, what the A's have been, like, it's kind of the same, just maybe it's a different approach to it, right? More or less, it's like, because they're both those teams are very famously about maximizing roster without a ton of payroll.
Yeah.
Maybe not the same exact strategy, but I think
What it is a little bit similar to is there was, I think it was the Rays a couple of years ago, were like cycling through the last man in their bullpen like once a week, basically. Yeah. They were like, we're going to have the freshest guy here to like take these innings and have the strongest arm. And then once we use him, he's going to go back down for a little bit. So, yes, you're right. That like sort of as a philosophy, it's kind of similar. In the execution, I think it's a little bit different.
I think it is different, but I guess what I'm getting at is that I think it's a good strategy to try to find that. I think DePoto's doing a good job.
Yeah.
I mean, even if the results don't, I think he's doing a good job of it. I think it's worth the effort, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, I guess like at this point, he kind of doesn't have a choice. Like how else are you going to improve that team when you have the worst farm system and you kind of are maxed out? Like you don't have a lot of upside on that roster, especially with Cano hurt. It's like Haniger and Segura, I guess, are the like guys, and Seager. Zunino maybe, Mike Zunino.
Seager.
Yeah, I feel like Seeger is kind of is who he is at this point. Like,
oh,
he's
I
a little
see,
bit
to
past
develop.
The prime.
I see. You're
yeah, yeah. There's not going to be like a ton of guys who take a big step forward.
Right. Yeah.
And even some of those guys who like you would hope for a take big step forward, like Haniger and like James Paxton, they've already taken it, right? So like they need to continue doing that.
Yeah, Paxton's so good.
To get, huh?
Paxton's so good.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Did you see they're doing a bobblehead of the like eagle landing on him? So great.
That's good. I think Mariners have good marketing.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. That was I totally interrupted what you're saying.
No,
but
no,
yeah, yeah. I think it is a good. And also, like, if it doesn't like always like, I guess I'm thinking of all these trades. If you're a fan of the team, if you're a Mariners fan, there's nothing to dislike, right?
Yeah, I without knowing the specifics of those prospects,
right.
Like maybe if you're a huge fan of one of those prospects,
yeah.
I mean, they must be sort of in the high. Well, actually, I don't know, because again, there was a lot of money. I think the Mariners took on like $12 million or something, which is a lot of money to the Rays. So maybe the prospects aren't even good for the Mariners system. I'm not sure.
I don't know either. But yeah, without knowing that, because it's like Colomé, like even if he's like an average reliever, you have
but certainly I think if you're a Mariners fan, it's encouraging to see them like try to prop up the roster because they've gotten off to such a good start.
Yes.
And those wins are already banked. It would be really discouraging, like on top of Cano getting suspended, if they started just struggling and there was nothing that was done about it, like if they were sort of boxed in, you know.
And I feel like just like the comp is the Royals when they were like kind of good, not the year that they got Zobrist Cueto because that was good, but sometimes they were just adding these like fringe, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And this one, if I was a fan, I'd be like, okay, I know these are all obviously, it's not like you're going to start jumping for joy for Denard Span, but
right.
like,
but you can see
how
the utility of them.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
It's pretty obvious how they're going to help the team.
Especially within the limitations that they have. It feels like a good move. And then the Rays, it's like fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Save some money. Figure out what your next move is. I think you're not going to catch the Red Sox or Yankees.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's pretty apparent this year for sure. Well, I think that's a good place to take a little break. And when we come back, we'll be talking about sort of the league as a whole, doing our Memorial Day check-in. And we will talk about our favorite and least favorite Royals of all time. So stick around. We'll be right back. We are back with more Duck Snort.
Duck Snort.
Very ghostly.
Duck Snort. All right.
enough messing around, Waylon.
Enough
we got serious business to take care of. Let's talk about
baseball.
All
right, so we're basically a third away through the season.
Yes.
Around this time, usually you can separate the
contenders from the pretenders, as they
exactly.
say.
Just like Hanley had that great April, but the real Hanley Ramirez showed up. So we can kind of talk about where we think we stand at this point now that it's starting to be summertime. We're getting into June. Flag Day is just around the corner.
I know you have it marked on your calendar.
I do,
circled.
But it's also Donald Trump's birthday, so that bummed me out.
I think a good place to start is the NL East.
Great.
Because it's a tight race right now, unexpectedly
yes.
tight. The Phillies are in first place as we're recording this by a half game over the Braves. Nationals are a game and a half back. The Mets are 3.5 games back.
Four-team race.
And just before we started recording, Ronald Acuña went down with what looks to be potentially a very serious knee injury. We don't know the full scoop yet, but his knee buckled sort of backwards.
Yeah.
He was down on the ground for a long time. He did walk off the field, but it did not look
good. We'll probably know by
good.
The time this comes out what the deal is.
Yeah, I would imagine people listening know what the deal is. But, I mean, I think it's safe to say that at the very least he'll miss some time. Like, it didn't seem like the kind of thing he could avoid the disabled list from.
Yeah, he'll probably be at least...
So if he misses a month, obviously that's a blow to the Braves. If he misses the season, it's a blow to the Braves, a bigger blow to the Braves and to baseball. That would suck. But I guess, like, question. So these four teams, A, which of them do you think are real contenders? And B, who do you think will end up taking the division at this point?
Great. So I think the Nationals, are real contenders.
Yes.
They've played well recently overall. They're back to a game and a half out, like we said. 560 winning percentage, which would be the best record in the NL West and the second best record in the NL Central. So they're playing well. So I think the Nationals, I think the answer is the Nationals, especially if Acuña's out for a while. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time not picking the Nationals. However, I believe the Braves are for real. I think they can survive an Acuña injury because they were actually playing well before Acuña came up. It's not like he kickstarted it.
Mm-hmm.
I think Albies, while he's probably not going to be the power hitter that he is now, I think he'll settle somewhere. I think he's going to continue to be good all year, even if he's not as good. And I think they might make a move. They could sign Hanley, perhaps. They could trade for Moustakas.
Actually, that'd be interesting. I didn't think about that, but they do have a pretty big hole at third base, which Hanley could feasibly cut. I mean, if they think Jose Bautista can play third, Hanley Ramirez could probably play third.
I did read, and I think this is true, if they get Hanley and he ends up getting the at-bats he needed, they would pick up that option. Like, his option doesn't disappear. Just
well, that would be if they traded for him. If he becomes a free agent, that would not pass.
So I think Hanley would be a gamble. I think, I don't know, it depends what the Royals would ask, but knowing the Royals, they would be fine getting ripped off. So I think getting Moose for the rest of the year could be potentially good because Moose is playing well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the Braves are in it. I think it's going to be ultimately a two-team race between the Nationals and Braves. I think the Phillies can stay in the wild card hunt and the Mets, if their pitchers stay healthy as well, but I don't think the Phillies and Mets are going to contend for the division. Those are my thoughts.
Those are fair thoughts. I guess, like, for me, I think the Braves have had more overachievers than either of those other teams, or any of those other teams, rather. So that's the reason I could see them potentially falling back. Like, I don't think that they're a 90-plus win team necessarily.
Yeah.
They have already banked wins, so, and they're a better team than they were at the start of the season since they've called up Acuña and Soroka and a few other guys.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't see a solid all-around pitching staff there the way that do for the Phillies, who, like, with Arrieta and Nola is having an incredible season.
Yeah.
And I think there's guys on the Phillies who could, like, play a lot better. Kingery is not having a great rookie year. Hoskins has been very cold since the start of the season. Carlos Santana is playing below his capabilities, I think. So, like, I think there's a lot of Braves fever right now across baseball.
Sure.
And, like, some of it is very warranted. I mean, Albies is having an incredible year.
Yeah.
But he's also hitting with so much more power than he was ever expected. But he was a singular prospect, you know? So it's like, with some of these prospects, I think the inclination is to say, like, oh, they've established how good they are and they will continue to be that good. And, like, I think if I'm going to make a generalized statement, it's like, I think those guys generally take a small step back as the league starts to adjust to them.
I get it. It kind of feels like go ahead.
Well, basically, I think that's sort of what's happened with Hoskins. Is like Hoskins had like those three incredible months at the end of the year. He started out this year just as hot, and now the league has adjusted to him. So it's like, let's see if he adjusts back. And for the Braves, for guys like Albies, you know, I don't think that's happened yet. So let's maybe wait. It'll be interesting the next month or two to see, like, if the league adjusts to him, how do they adjust back?
Yeah, so it feels like you don't feel comfortable having a good read on Albies until maybe, like, August, it kind of sounds like, or July.
I think it's fair to say, like, oh, he's going to be a 3 or 4 win player by the end of the year. But, like, the distribution of those wins may be sort of up and down.
Yeah.
And it's also, like, I'm very confident in saying Nick Markakis is not one of the 20 best players in the major leagues.
I think Markakis is going to take a drop off, which I forgot when I was thinking about it. So maybe I'm going to go back. But, like, I guess the Braves this year feels like the Brewers last year.
Right.
The Brewers never really, like, I've long said, and I stand by it, I was never, as a Cubs fan, worried about the Brewers last year. Like, I just kind of knew that it wasn't going to last. And the Braves maybe feel a little like that, but that means they're so scary for next year because I'm definitely worried about the Brewers this year. And, but they got, obviously the Brewers made some big moves to get better, but the Braves could too. So I think the Braves can hang around. I think that it could, it could be mid August or late August, and you can we could still be talking about the Braves.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. I guess like we're sort of making the same point coming at it from different angles, which is like I think the Nationals will still win the division. I mean, like Harper is not having a great year. Maybe they get Eaton back.
How are Strasburg and Gonzalez doing? Because I honestly don't know.
So I'm on the Fangraphs war leaderboards, and the Nationals don't have a guy in the top 30 in position players right now, I think is kind of shocking considering, obviously, Harper. Harper is 49th.
Rendon.
Turner. Actually, Harper's their only guy in the top 60. So, like, Rendon, Turner, Eaton if he gets healthy.
Mark Reynolds, who still plays baseball.
Which you just found out. Zimmerman had a great year last year. So, like, I think the Nationals have the most room to improve, minus Scherzer, who is having an insane year. And Gio Gonzalez is having a very good year, too.
Oh, great.
So, like, and they don't have that huge Achilles heel they had in the first half of last year, which with the bullpen.
Speaking of Mark Reynolds, I realized the other day he is only 4 months older than me.
Did that make you feel ancient?
And Melky Cabrera is 10 months younger than me.
Oof. That's tough, dude. That's a tough realization.
Melky Cabrera is almost a year younger than
you. Yeah, that'll send you into some existential angst
anyway,
right
those
there.
Those two players. Anyway, okay, so I think it's the Nationals division. I think the Mets are probably what they are. They're 25-23.
Yeah, they seem like a 500 team.
So I feel like if that gets them to hang in there, like I don't think the Mets are going to get much better. I don't think they can get much worse unless they get a bunch of injuries. So I'm not too concerned about the Mets.
Okay. I'm with you.
Right. Like, I think they could be a winning team, and if you're looking wild card, or if the Cubs are in a wild card position, which they currently are, then I would look at the Mets. But division-wise, I think it's the Nationals. And I could see an argument for the Braves or Phillies, but I think both of them could also hang. They could probably fall by the wayside pretty easily. Although you made a compelling argument for the Phillies to get better and the Braves to get worse.
I think, in my mind, the Braves and the Phillies are about the same true talent level.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
And so... yeah, and they're about the same record right now. Yeah. So, like, it'll be fun to watch them to see if, A, either of them add any pieces, or if, you know, the guys who are playing well, the Aaron Nolas and the Ozzie Albies, if they can maintain that new level, like, are they stars, or are they guys who are a year or two away from being stars still?
Be very fun to watch. I think it'll be very great to watch. Should we move on to the NL Central?
Well, I think let's breathe through the AL real quick because interesting about the AL to me, and we've talked about a lot of these teams, these divisions over the last couple episodes, but what's interesting about the AL to me as compared to the NL is like things started off a little bit unpredictably, but they've sort of fallen into like the general order that we assumed at the beginning of the season.
Although Cleveland's doing it in a very dumb way. They're doing it because the rest of the division is bad.
So here's the counter to that, which is the Indians have not played the AL Central very much yet.
Oh, okay.
And so the AL Central is very bad.
They're going to
feast. So, the Indians are about to play the White Sox, and like let's see what their record looks like after they've played the White Sox and the Orioles, or the White Sox and the Royals for, you know, 10 times in the next 3 weeks.
And I think that'll humble the Tigers a little bit, too.
Yeah,
for sure.
Because
the Tigers are playing over there. I mean, the Tigers are 23-29, so they're not playing over their head that much.
But they're three
games out.
But otherwise, like, you know, I think the Red Sox are playing better than people expected, and I think that'll continue. They look really good. The Yankees obviously have been the Yankees, especially in the last couple weeks.
That's with Didi Gregorius' splits. Look, have you looked at his April May splits?
He's having a terrible May.
I think we're in for a classic early mid 2000s Red Sox Yankees race.
Yeah,
which is going to be fun.
Oh, absolutely. And then the one team that's really surprised has been the Mariners, who we were just talking about whether they can keep that up. But they're a couple games ahead of the Angels right now. And it would be really kind of fun if they sort of managed to maintain their current level.
Oh, it'd be great. Yeah.
So I'm rooting for them. I don't know how likely it is.
I still think it might be more likely than Oakland. I think
Oakland maintaining their like 500.
I think they might be able to hover around 500, but I think it's more likely that Seattle is in the hunt come late August than Oakland.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I would say that's true for sure, just because I think the Mariners are a better team. But
right.
I feel like Oakland is a blind spot for me a little bit this season, where I'm like, I really don't know. Like, I could name some of their exciting young players, but I don't know who's in their starting rotation.
Yeah.
I don't know who, like, I mean, Matt Chapman and Matt Olson, I assume, are having good years if this team is that good. But
I'm the same way. They're a little bit of a blind spot, and they don't have, like, a James Paxton. Like,
yeah,
they don't have a player that you're looking at being like, well, that's a big reason the Mariners, or like Mitch Haniger or
yeah,
Zunino. Like,
they don't have anybody who's forcing you to pay attention to them.
Right, but they're still hovering around 500, but that makes me think that like it can't be sustained. Like,
mm-hmm.
I could be wrong, but usually at this point I feel like the Brewers last year, I was like, oh, who are these Brewers playing? Like, I'm
right.
still like,
yeah.
Or maybe it's just my West Coast bias.
your reverse West Coast bias that makes you not know anything about the Athletics. Well, let's talk real quick about NL Central and NL West then.
Okay.
I want to hear your opinion on the Brewers, and they're way out in front, not way, but four games out in front of the Cardinals, Pirates, and Cubs. Who do you think, try to divorce yourself from Cubs
yeah.
fandom for a minute. Who do you think is going to win this division?
I don't know. I honestly don't. The crazy thing is that the Cubs are 7-1 against the Brewers so far. Which is, like, mind-blowing. Like,
they're 7-1 and four games behind.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, think about how far they'd be behind if they were not
worse.
Seven.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a hard time thinking the Pirates are going to stay in it.
Yeah.
I kind of feel the same way about the Pirates as I do, like, the A's or Mets, where I mean, they're 28 and 23, but I don't think it's sustainable. I think it's between the Cardinals, Brewers, and Cubs.
Sure.
I ultimately think it's going to come down to the Cubs or Brewers. I don't know who's going to win. Like, the Cubs are so inconsistent right now. I don't see how they can get better unless Quintana or Darvish just gets better.
Is Darvish still on the DL, or is he?
He went back on the DL
okay.
yesterday. He's actually been pitching better lately. And Chatwood is pitching well, but he's just walking. He's got like 38 walks and 39 innings. It's like something like that. But
mm-hmm.
otherwise, he's playing kind of the way that everyone thought he would. He's just walking a ton of dudes.
Mm.
Hendricks is giving up more home runs, but otherwise, he's as good as he's ever been. So it's like, what? But like, how? No one. Why is Hendricks giving up more? Like,
yeah,
that's the stuff that needs to get better. And solo home runs might not kill you. Lester's playing very well.
Is the new pitching coach coming under any heat for Darvish
and
Quintana?
I haven't seen a lot about that, as far as I know. I mean, I don't read like the Chicago Tribune, so
yeah.
I don't know, but like in the coverage I see, no. Anyway, I'm talking about the Cubs too much. I think the Brewers are for real.
Yeah.
And I am worried about the Brewers. I'm more worried about the Brewers and Cardinals, even though the Cardinals have the Cubs number this year, so it's like a weird triangle if everyone's beating everyone up.
Yeah, and the Cardinals are about to get Alex Reyes back,
yeah.
who I don't know if you saw his like rehab numbers at all.
No.
I think it was something like he struck out like 39 guys in 20 innings or something like that. So they could
cool.
get a boost. And
yeah.
Paul DeJong is on the DL, so maybe he
yeah.
comes back.
It could be a great three-way race. I'm not worried at all about the Pirates.
But and you're pretty confident like the Cubs are going to stay in it. You don't see them like falling back to
yeah.
500.
No, I don't. I don't. Yes, I
without,
don't see
that. Without like injuries or
without
something
like
that.
A without a huge injury.
Yeah, losing Bryant and Rizzo
or like Hendricks or Lester for like the whole season. I think it's going to be a close race. I don't feel confident picking last year at this time. I would have been like, the Cubs are going to beat the Brewers. I don't think that anymore. I think it's going to be similar to the East. Only I think that the Brewers and Cardinals are more for real than the Braves or Phillies.
Yeah. Well, and then the NL West, like, so 5.5 games separate the Rockies from the Padres, first to last. A big clusterfuck. I thought the Diamondbacks were going to run away with this thing, and now they're one game over 500.
They can't win.
Yeah.
Like, they've lost, like, something at, like, 14 of their last 16 or something like that. Like,
I mean, how crazy would it be if the Giants, like, came out on top? Like, it's very possible.
Like I kind of feel like they might be the best team in the division right now, and it's crazy to say that.
Yeah, even without Madison Bumgarner. Well, you know who's having an insane year is Brandon Belt.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Well, not out of nowhere. He's a good player, but like...
It's a bigger jump than you'd expect.
A huge leap, yeah. I mean, he's been worth 2.5 wins, 6th in the majors,
and the Dodgers
position
have been
players.
Well, and the Rockies have been in first place somehow for like a week and a half straight. I think it's a crapshoot. I have no idea.
Yeah, me neither.
I would.
This is some.
Giants.
This is some great analysis now. I don't fucking know. Why am I supposed to fucking know? Let's watch it. Why are we even talking about this?
Well, I kind of feel that way because I think predictions are weird. But like overall, like it, I do kind of feel like I have. That's such a mystery to me.
Yeah.
That division because of all the injuries with the Dodgers. Like.
Yeah.
But the Dodgers are only 3.5 out, and if they get healthy, then.
Here's what I know. We're doing our Memorial Day check-in, but here's what I think we should do, which is talk about the NL West next week when we have a week more games. Okay, so that
the wild card is shaping up to be crazy, and because in the wild card, every team is in it except for the Padres, Marlins, or Reds.
Yeah,
and I can see any. I think the Pirates probably will fall off, but that's the only team I feel like won't be in it.
I'm excited for the NL in general. Yeah. It's definitely going to be more compelling than the American League, it seems like.
Because it feels like it's going to be Yankees or Red Sox. Whoever loses that is going to win the wild card. And then it's down to just basically the Mariners and Angels.
Yeah.
Like, which will be fun. But it's like it's not as many. It's like pretty. It feels like it's pretty set.
Yeah, there's. It doesn't seem like there's much of a chance of like three play-in games as it could be in the NL.
The National League is the Wild West, and I can't pick who's better than who.
Yeah.
Cool. Should we do? Should we go to the Royals?
Yeah, we have about 10 more minutes, so let's dive into Royals talk. I mean, pretty self-explanatory. We've been doing this for a few weeks. This is our last favorite team since you, of course, have two favorites. so I guess your second favorite. But let's talk, I guess.
They're 1B.
Okay. I don't know. Do you want to start or do you want to hear mine first? Let's start least favorite.
Start least favorite? Okay, I want to hear yours.
My least favorite Royal ever is... Drumroll.
Bo Jackson.
Bruce Chen.
Okay, yeah, why?
Not the name that you were expecting.
Yeah.
Because he killed the White Sox every fucking time for like three years in a row.
That's
Hawk
crazy.
Harrelson literally called him Cy Chen for like
every year.
He would have a 5 ERA, and then he would come in and throw 7 shutout innings against the White Sox. And because of the weighted divisions, we would see him like 3 or 4 times a year, and it would just be like there was one year, I think, where he like got released by the Royals, and then they re-signed him, and then he started against the White Sox and pitched great. I'm aware it's weird because like Bruce Chen, if anything, is known for being a journeyman pitcher.
Yeah.
Like, he's not identified with any one team in particular. But I think he did have, on his baseball reference right now, he pitched 6 years in a row for the Royals from 2009 to 2014. Was, like, league average-ish. Like, that was probably his best stretch of pitching. And, like, I don't know. I guess I could pull up his career splits. I don't know how to find like his splits when he was just with the Royals, but I mean, he just like, let's see. Okay. Yeah. So his career numbers, 3.40 ERA in 19 starts against the White Sox.
Damn.
So like for as many innings as he pitched against the White Sox, that is by the best splits of his career.
That's crazy that he just dominated the... I don't particularly remember that.
He also, I'm looking at his stats right now, he threw the most innings against the White Sox of any team in his career.
Wow.
So for comparison's sake, 129 and two-thirds innings against the White Sox, 3.40 ERA. 114 and two-thirds innings against the Tigers, 5.42 ERA. 100 innings against the Twins, 5.94 ERA. Why was he so good against the White Sox?
I don't know.
Yeah. No explanation.
What, like, why? I mean, I feel like we had, like, the like, I dislike Joe Creedy.
Yeah, right. We talked.
It's
yeah,
same
yeah.
thing.
Same
it's
thing.
Like just the random dude that's going to just pick on your team.
Yep.
And it gets so annoying.
Yep.
I did not know Bruce Chen did that to the White Sox.
Yep.
That's
now you know.
So funny.
Now you know.
Who's
your least favorite Royal ever?
It was
ever?
Really hard for me to pick because I feel like Nephi Perez or Jose Guillen should probably be in there. But for some reason, And I also feel like probably it should be Alcides Escobar, but it's hard to hate anybody that was on the squad that won the World Series.
Right,
you know?
Sure.
I will never get over Jeff Francoeur. he did have like a good half of a season or something, and then the Royals thought that he was like, the Royals talked themselves into Jeff Francoeur so hard.
Multiple times too, yeah. Right?
And I didn't fall off. Like, I was into him, of course, when he was playing well, but I fell off of a cliff with that guy so quickly, and he just was there for so, I don't know, like, he sticks out in my mind. Like,
sure.
Royals have made so many bad signings, and, like, Nephi Perez, like I said, Guillen and Perez really stand out as, like, two just terrible players, the Royals. But,
right.
Like, I kind of, maybe it's because Francoeur did get my hopes up, you know, and maybe because I knew he did it to Braves fans first, and then he came, like, he had the gall to come to Kansas City and
right.
do it to us, too. But Frenchie is my least favorite Royal.
Well, that was, like, kind of a little bit of a bleak time for the Royals. I mean, there's so many bleak times for the Royals, but but that was in the period, right, where, like, it was the, not the process, but, like, what did, there was a name that Royals fans
used. 5-year plan?
Yeah, something like that, where it was, like, year 7 of Dayton Moore's 5-year plan, and they just kept running this guy out there.
And I think it was also because that was when hope started to, you know, I feel like Francoeur was around the time where it's like, I can, because I think that's around when Hosmer and Moustakas were either going to get called up or they were there.
Yeah. It was kind of the years where Hosmer and Moustakas sucked and they, Kane was up, but they weren't playing Kane
and
at
Gordon
the expense
was,
of a guy.
Gordon was
like
starting
Francoeur.
To get good. Yeah. They weren't playing Kane. Yeah. There, and it was, he was like, I think he just represented the old guard.
Yeah.
Like, I think he became, like, the focus of, like, stop running your franchise like this.
Right.
And when it was, like, Jose Guillen and Nephi Perez, it was like, I guess this is just how the Royals are now. You know, so Frenchie sticks out the most as a player that I just like the most from the Royals.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes a ton of sense to me. I mean, he's a very easily hateable player. Yeah. Like, not an aesthetically pleasing game with, like, the way that he, like, just struck out so much and kind of he seemed like he should be much better than he is, which is a very frustrating type of player.
It's like Jason Hayward times like 9.
Yeah.
Because Frenchie was kind of good and right, but it was like,
but the team was so bad.
Yeah. Cool. Favorite Royal?
You know, this one is tough for me because I don't have like too many specific memories of like I loved watching this guy on the Royals, you know, like Johnny Damon and Carlos Beltran, I think were like very fun guys to watch, but like I identify both of them with other teams more than I identify them with the Royals at this point.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I'm actually going to go recent and I'm going to go with Lorenzo Cain.
Yeah.
I really liked watching Lorenzo Cain. Super fun, incredible defensive player. Kind of the opposite of Francoeur in that he has a very aesthetically pleasing game. Like even if he's not like the best hitter in the league, but he's above average and he doesn't strike out a ton and he is super productive, like just across all facets. He's sort of like a prototypical like 5-tool guy.
Yeah. He was so great to watch. And like, as much as I dislike the Brewers, like I can't not root for Kane.
Right.
So that's a really good choice. My modern choice, like for this team, would be Salvi.
Okay,
because he's just like such a. He was my favorite player of like the squad that was successful.
Mm-hmm.
Because he, it's almost the same thing as Kane. It was like those two, and those two dudes had like the best relationship.
Yeah,
like Salvador Perez was constantly messing with Kane, and they both smile all the time, and they both like are weird kind of. So I think it'd be close between those two, but Salvador Perez just like feels like the guy that your franchise holds on to, you know, like that's your guy. But George Brett's my favorite of all time.
Yeah, I mean, that's an easy choice. In the way that Frank Thomas is an easy choice for White Sox fans, George Brett's an easy one for Royals fans, I think.
I didn't see him in his prime, obviously, but when I first started getting into baseball, Brett was like the year before Brett's 3,000 chase.
Mm.
So I definitely got to see Brett play live towards the end of his career. And like his stories are insane. If you haven't heard I know you've heard it, but if you're listening, you haven't heard the
diarrhea story
when he shit himself in Vegas. It's just an all time great story.
Yeah. Find it on YouTube. It's incredible.
George Brett poops his pants. It's such a good, and he's like, it looks like it's like spring training. Like while players are stretching, he's just wandering around talking about it. But like anytime he's in the broadcast booth, it's great. Like when the All-Star game was in Kansas City and he was like on all these broadcasts, like he's just such a good ambassador for like a, like he's just, he's like Bob Uecker. He's like a young Bob Uecker in a little bit. But I mean, it's George Brett.
Yeah.
Like you can't be like, and since I got to see him play a little, like he was my first favorite player ever.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, like, you don't ever, like...
Well, he's, like, the greatest player in franchise history,
right?
For
it is,
sure.
Like, Frank Thomas for you. Yeah.
He's the Royal.
He's the Royal, but, like, also the way he played, like, I think because I liked him, like, I love power, but I also like players that get a ton of doubles and triples. He didn't take a lot of walks, but that wasn't the game then. Like, he's just a good hitter, and he hustled. The Pine Tar incident's, like, super fun. I don't know how non-Royals fans view that, but I think it's great. I don't know. I like him. He won 3 batting titles in 3 different decades. Only player to do that.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And he almost hit 400 while battling through hemorrhoids. Or 400, yeah. He had hemorrhoids real bad, that's like half that season.
Wow, what a noble battle that is to battle through.
Yeah, but it has to be George Brett.
Yeah.
It's not even
great
close.
Choice.
Yep.
With that, why don't we call it an episode?
Sounds good.
You and I, sir, have to get to our own baseball game.
We do.
So... thank you all for listening. Be sure to subscribe in iTunes and leave reviews or wherever you get your podcast from. Thank you to Boardwalk Audio and to Off the Bench Baseball for their support. Thank you to Moonbounce for the transition music. Thank you to our slick editor, Joe, for taking care of all the production stuff. And we will see you next week for another episode of Duck Snort. So long.
And a Boardwalk Audio podcast. For more information and shows, visit boardwalkaudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.